Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, this is Inside the Documentary, featuring breakdowns and interviews about all the latest documentaries.
Hey guys, welcome into another episode of the Popcorn Talk, right here on the Popcorn Talk, Inside the Documentary on the AfterBuzz TV family of networks. I'm your host, Bobby DeMuro. Today, before we get going, we are streaming this live. So if you are watching on YouTube for this documentary discussion, you can comment on YouTube. You can also tweet me at Bobby DeMuro. You can tweet the Popcorn Talk at The Popcorn Talk. Pretty simple there. And hit subscribe on YouTube or iTunes, wherever you are listening or watching this. We're talking about the documentary Mateo today, and we've got a little treat for you guys. In here with me in studio is filmmaker Aaron Narr and the star of the show, Mateo himself, Matthew Mateo Stoneman. Gentlemen, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
So we got a lot to talk about. I believe there's going to be a performance later, or two or three, or, you know, if I run out of questions, maybe a whole concert. Before we get into it, though, Mateo is out now in theaters here in L.A. We were just talking about this. It's in theaters in Hollywood here. So if you're in L.A., you can watch that. We'll talk about where in just a second. But for most of you who are watching this online, it is on iTunes on Tuesday, to the world, distributed everywhere. So you can go see that online on Tuesday. A lot to talk about. Before we do it, let's hit the trailer. Here's the official trailer to Mateo.
You know, I'd like to move. It's very, living here is very unproductive.
Okay, you could start by telling us about the new hairstyle. Well, what's that for? For tips or to get some women?
With the women.
Okay. Is it working or no?
Yeah, I'm working.
Yo canto aquí por ocho años. Muchas veces yo estoy en televisión. Would you like to hear my CD? I recorded in Cuba with full orchestra. In Cuba with a couple people from Buena Vista Social Club. I do a lot of parties. You want me to sign up, put my number in there for a party?
Nothing.
Or I also take tips if you like the scene. Okay, gracias.
I don't know if I achieve it, but I'd like to be a great singer. Somebody that sang with a lot of feeling. Somebody like a Billie Holiday.
Y siento inmensa emoción.
Yo quiero como Hemingway. ¿Conoces Hemingway? 20 años aquí. Él murió. Wait a minute, we gotta let the applause die down. Okay. Okay.
All right, so first things first, before we get into the film itself, the trailer there. The initial, here's what I know. Here's what I came into this knowing, because a lot of times we'll read up on stuff, we'll do a lot of background, whatever. On this one, I saw the trailer and the film. And that's it. And I chose not to because of the way that the trailer was set up. It was so directionless. And I mean that in a good way. That's not an insult. A lot of films need direction. A lot don't. This is one that sort of stood out on its own directionless. I thought, you know what? I'm going to go into this film totally in the dark.
Cool.
I just saw the trailer and then went into the film. So I got to ask you first, Mateo, I think for you, because we don't often get the subjects of the films in here. We usually get the filmmakers. How do you think you were portrayed in this? Seeing this, do you think that it was fair how you were portrayed, or did something about you not come across?
To be honest, I haven't seen it.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, well, what then? Just in the trailer, maybe.
I've seen little stuff like that, but you know, there's some real personal stuff in there. And I don't know. I shouldn't be doing that. Okay. So I haven't seen it yet.
Are you ever going to, like,
yeah,
now when
yeah,
you get to,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, well, eventually, yeah.
Okay. Why, what's the reason?
I've been with it all over the place, a lot of different cities, and,
yeah.
I sing afterwards, and
Yeah. So you guys, that's the thing. So you guys have been touring for a year. This premiered at South by Southwest a year ago. You guys have been touring all around the country for a year. Well, the world for a year. Yeah. What's, Aaron, been the reaction to this film when people see it?
Pretty good. A lot of people are unexpected by what they see.
Yeah.
You know, because the style of it's a bit different, and Matthew's a bit different than what people are expecting.
Just,
to be
just a little
just
bit.
The star of a documentary. You know, because a lot of people think, like, you're going to have a very, like, one-dimensional portrayal. Like, you're going to see this person, he's going to do this, and you'll have this moral takeaway.
Yeah.
And what attracted me to Mateo was, it's like this complicated guy doing all these crazy things all around the world. And so, depending on where we show up, people identify with different things.
What do people, and I don't want to get too specific about every country, but in America generally, maybe in LA or the West Coast, whatever, what do people identify with? Because I want to see if I'm...
Sure.
With the majority of people.
a lot of the sensational things. Number one is the music.
Yeah.
People don't expect Matthew, because you have a very soft demeanor, to have this very, like, high-pitched, very sweet, soft-sounding voice. And they don't expect him to be conducting a big orchestra.
Yeah.
Number one. Two would be his backstory, prison. And three would be his affinity for women in Cuba.
Yeah.
Europe, the... affinity for women, not really discussed, sort of, especially just because I think Europeans in general are used to going to Cuba. You know, it's like a Caribbean destination like any other for them. The U.S., Cuba's always been the forbidden fruit. So, you know, everything is sort of amped up a level when you talk about, this is happening in Havana. And they're like, oh my God, what is this place? Whereas you go, it's tons of Europeans, Asians, you know.
And I think that's one thing that really... And I'm totally right with Americans. Well, right, I'm wrong with Americans, but in step with them on this. Seeing Cuba depicted in this film, it wasn't depicted politically at all. Yeah. Everything we hear about Cuba is political, you know, yeah. And that's partly by choice of what we consume. But everything in this film, nothing you do there is political. It's all, you know, whether it's relationships or romance or music, it's like, I'm like, wait a second, there's an embargo, there's this and that. Not to everyday people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was the experience sort of with Matthew going there. And I wanted to maintain that, which is sort of like the tourist mentality.
Yeah.
Like, it was not at all supposed to say, we believe this is what Cuba should be or shouldn't be. You know, it was just very much, this is how Matthew experiences Cuba. Isn't that really unique? You know, because to me, I learned a lot with Matthew's particular Cuba. Mainly, how to eat pizza and ice cream. But...
that was a good shot of him eating ice cream down a Havana street.
They do have good ice cream.
Oh, they do. Yeah, yeah. Cuba's known for it. Yeah.
What Mateo? What was it like having cameras track you every day? I mean, how long did they follow you? First off, what was it like being in this process, making this film? Do you forget that they're there?
Yeah, completely. Because they film so much that you probably filmed 100 hours. I don't know how many are.
Way more, 10 times that.
Yeah. And
wow.
So you just. And even when they turn the cameras off, often the mic's still going.
Got to capture it all.
you kind of forget about it.
Yeah, yeah, I bet.
We shot over 4 years. And, you know, it's kind of, accepting to be in a documentary is a very personal decision, you know? And so sometimes it's just hard to open up. And so it took a while to sort of build this relationship where we can sit down and discuss things. And a lot of things it just turned out were better through observation than they were by saying, Matthew, why do you do this? Because it's hard sometimes when you're confronted with the direct question. It's sometimes easier to say things or learn by seeing. You know?
Or, you know, I was going to say, having seen it, not learn by seeing.
Yes.
There's 100 questions I have, but every one of my questions would want a fact or a black and white, a thing. What is the answer here to things that don't really have answers necessarily? A lot of the things you do in the film, I'm like, why is this happening? What is this? What's this backstory? But sometimes it's almost better left unsaid.
Well, unless you want to comment on it. I mean, that's what I connected to, because that's sort of how I feel a lot about myself, is I still question a lot of things. Some reasons I do some things. I questioned why I was making the film. A lot of the times, you know?
Over 4 years,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Exactly. And so with Matthew, it's like, why is this take better than another? You know, why do you choose to communicate with these people or to have a stronger relationship with this person over this person? You know, sometimes they're just decisions that are still developing, you know? And so we couldn't answer them. And to provide an answer, like, would have been disingenuous, you know? Because to be honest, like, a lot of the things that you do are still unresolved. The album that he makes in the film that he finishes, it's not released yet. So I can't tell you I wish I could have said Matthew becomes a millionaire and does something else, but you know that's still post film. You know.
Mateo, I guess I have a couple questions though. Very broadly, the first one is why Cuba? What appealed to you specifically about Cuba? Especially living in L.A., you have all the Mexican and Latin American influence from the West. Why Cuba?
I think it was the Buena Vista Social Club that you know much about their music? Yeah. And I've told this before, but I remember the first time I always saw them was when I was in prison. Well, first when I was in jail, I got a hold of the L.A. Times and had a column one story about all the old cars and going to Cuba and... And then later on, I remember they had on the prison channel the Buena Vista movie. And I don't know if I felt a familiarity or whatever, but it was so interesting. Great music. And so I contacted somebody, one of the people behind that. And that's how I went to Cuba the first time.
And just from there, it was, that's all she wrote? I just fit in?
Yeah, I don't know. It's such a beautiful experience going there.
Wow.
I've been there probably 40 times.
It is, and I like the way you guys portray it because you don't patronize it. You don't make a political statement on it. You don't say, well, this is a developing country or any of this stuff. It's just people. And they come from a different place, but you kind of forget that. And when I see you interacting with people there and I see the interviews and stuff, it's like, well, this could be in L.A. You could go to certain areas of L.A. and it would look exactly like this.
Sometimes people say to me, they'll say, oh, communist, this, that. I can honestly say... All the trips I've taken there, I've never met somebody that thought, well, that's a communist. Or, you know, like you'll come here and you'll meet somebody, you go, well, that's a hardcore Christian or this or that. And everybody's just there just trying to get their little hustle on, do their thing and get their, you know, live their life.
Yeah,
sure. You know? Yeah, you definitely fell in with them. Like, you should see him walking around. I mean, when you're there experiencing Cuba with Matthew, he's at home. You know, he's not. He slows down, you know, in Cuba. Here, it's impossible to film him. It's like chasing him down streets, like following the car, trying to fit in the back seat of his car, not being able to. In Cuba, you can actually, you know, you have this sense of belonging, you know?
Is there anything, from your perspective, having been there so much as an American, now that the political winds are changing in Cuba, will anything change? Or from your perspective, is it just...
You're seeing more Americans, but it's going to take decades to.
Yeah.
And maybe a little bit of new paint, but overall it's still pretty much, I don't know. You know, I hate to see the little things like pregoneros, you know, that's like the people that sell things, bread or whatever. They're always walking down the street singing it out, going, pan duro, pan suave, like hard bread, soft bread. And then somebody will put a fishing line, like a basket with a from a high up, and with the money in it, they'll put the bread in. So, you know, little things like that. Or people eat in the street constantly, you know, right out of somebody's window. And just the little things that...
And you think that's going away?
Maybe a little bit, more and more, yeah.
Sort of as they modernize and whatever, yeah.
Sure, I guess you have to accommodate more tourists. What's interesting, though, is a lot more tourists from the U.S. have gone to Cuba than people realize.
Yeah.
Especially since 2010. But, you know, there were tens of thousands of U.S. citizens who went, and even more Cuban Americans
than that used to go. When I first started going there, like, I remember I went to the movies, and it used to be just all these old, like, bootlegged movies from the satellite. And I said, okay, I want to go to the B movie. I walk up the stairs. And it was just a TV with a crack in it. And like, you know, in Cuba, you never see somebody with the same shirt or everything. Like, maybe this shirt's from Italy, a tourist, and this is from somebody else. And your jaw would drop.
It's colorful.
When I first started going there, you'd see, like, a lot of kids playing baseball with just a stick and a soda cap as a ball.
Yep.
It sounds like an interesting place. It seems like it's interesting to see you cross cultures so effortlessly. I mean, the way it's portrayed in the film is how effortless it is. Was it that effortless in real life? I mean, for you, it's years and years of developing relationships. But like seeing it, Aaron, from your perspective, coming in as the stranger, the first couple times you went, especially, is it somebody trying to fit in who's an American, or is it somebody who's just completely accepted?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. I think hopefully the film speaks to that a bit, but I mean, I think there's this being on the outskirts of all these different places feeling to the film. I personally thought you feel more at home in Havana than you do in L.A.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, okay.
Most people don't feel at home in L.A. So.
Yeah, okay. Touché.
Yeah. I like, and it's funny, though, Mateo, you say, and it makes it in the film, but you haven't seen it yet, so I'll mention it.
Don't ruin it. No spoilers.
But you do say in the film that people in L.A., and I'll paraphrase, people in L.A. drive to their home, shut their doors, shut themselves away. Alec Baldwin said that exact same thing in an interview I watched in some random thing maybe 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. Almost the exact same words. You obviously said this a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting to see that two people from such different backgrounds had the same idea about L.A.
Yeah.
And the same idea that not and this film isn't about L.A., but just the idea of community and the idea of seeing people in the street and collaborating with people musically for you, but just the ability to interact with people on a different level where here the only interaction we do is on the phone.
Well, you could probably say bad things about LA for 2 hours, right? We could spend 10 shows.
We've done that. We actually did an LA documentary here a while ago and went in on LA. But it's just interesting to see that there are some universal things about communities. It's not just LA. It's more broad about communities. And Havana is very, very generally, maybe almost to me, because I'm from the South, it's almost like the small town South in a weird way.
Yeah.
Everybody knows everybody. You're more welcoming. You buy food on the street.
Mm.
You collaborate on stuff, whatever. Yeah. You do things that you can't do in a big city.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, well, as the observer of Matthew in the studio there, I mean, he's just welcomed. You know, you just go and you slip in. The musicians are beautifully talented. And also, you can pay them. You know, it's hard to get someone who can pay a musician however much you get paid a session in Havana. You know, they rely on a lot of tourists coming in, right? Because the Cuban productions just don't have it, you know? And so that's also why so many musicians are talented, because they know that's a bankable asset there. So it's bizarre to have a tiny island like Cuba have, for like that genre, the best musicians in the world.
Yeah.
But they also, they have 10 and 12-year schools for music.
Well,
when you show that talent, they put you in school. Like, you'll hire a bongo player, and then on the break, he's playing piano. You know, and they all read music really well.
Yeah.
Education's amazing, and,
yeah.
Huh. But it seems so interesting that music is effective. I mean, we've known this for a lot of different angles, for a lot of different ways, but music's universal in the sense that no matter who you are, or in your case, what you look like going to a community, you come in, and if you can play, you can play.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, you do make a decent living playing in L.A.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't play, it's not like you're recording music in L.A.
Yeah.
So you could have saved up enough money to have a big recording session in L.A., but it's just a completely different experience.
Yeah, it's the atmosphere down there. I don't think it's cheaper in Cuba. I pay a lot of money there, you know?
Yeah.
Sure.
It's just, you go there for the flavor, for that experience, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Is there that's a big thing I'm wondering about too, because one of the subjects in the film says it very briefly, if you're going to make Cuban music, you got to go to Cuba.
Yeah.
But I think like Little Havana and Miami and stuff, why not go somewhere like Miami and find this? Or is it just you have to be the most authentic and it's that critical, I have to be in Cuba?
No, there are a lot of Cubans in Miami. You could definitely, there are probably Cubans here, but
yeah,
it's just the whole thing, that studio there. And Yeah,
the studio he records in is the one where Buena Vista
has a beautiful
recorded.
That's where all the old hits were recorded. Even Nat King Cole recorded his records there, Spanish records, yeah.
Do you find inspiration? I mean, how much, so I guess let me ask you this, because it took 7 years to make the album, and that's kind of what this documentary looks at, a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you write down there? Do you take inspiration down there too? Or do you have stuff from here that you then bring down there?
Well, both. I used to, you know, the first few years I was just kind of doing covers and finding my way, and I just started in Cuba. They have so many different styles of music, like some are more Eurocentric, some are more African centric, and I started writing in those styles to see how it would be. Like, for instance, probably the most famous cha-cha-cha group is called Orquesta Aragón. You know what cha-cha-cha is? Like,
mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah.
So I started working with them, and it's great for describing scenes of the city. Like, and one of the interesting things in Havana, they have bicycle taxis. Do they? I don't know if that's in the film, but
you see it.
Yeah, they're so amazing. You know, each one is different. So, you know, so I was walking down the street, And I thought, oh, that would be a great idea for Cha-Cha-Cha. So I wrote that about that. So, yeah, some things I write there, some I write here. Yeah. It's, some I write in my sleep. A couple of my better songs that come in my sleep, the melody, yeah.
And you have to wake up and remember it when
you... No, yeah, quickly write it down or record it, yeah.
You bought a digital recorder, actually, I remember that, for the first time while we were making this film.
Okay.
He was like, because he wakes up and I'll say, Aaron, you have to record this. I'm like, it would be great if you could record your own music here.
So there's a lot of questions that I have about this.
Sure.
One of them is your past and your background. You don't dive into it. They go see your parents. They don't dive into it. I thought that was a really interesting interview in New Hampshire. They never dive into it. And if you don't want to dive into it here either, obviously, but, I mean, how did it change you? Because it sounds like everything, not that your life started over in prison, but maybe it did. It sounds like your inspirations, Cuban music, Cuban culture sort of started there, and everything has grown out of that. Was it... Is the word rebirth too strong for that?
No, it's true. Sometimes prison has that effect. Like, for instance, I used to read a book all the... Read in prison. One of the books I used to read a lot was Malcolm X. And he said that before prison, he had a vocabulary of less than 200 words. And he read so much in prison that he hurt his eyes, you know? And so I realized that when I got there, that, you know, I'd never had a thought that was my own. And I started to think more, think about the environment and think about religion and, you know, and what I want to do with the rest of my life. And I was in the LA downtown jail 13 months, locked down. So when I got to prison, it was kind of a sense of freedom because you're walking around in the field. They have a big, it's like a baseball field, and I had this outburst of creativity, and I wrote a lot of songs, and I thought, well, they would be good for guitar, but I didn't know how to play guitar yet, so I just wrote them down, and I learned guitar in prison. And, you know, I started learning a lot of Mexican songs.
And you learned to speak Spanish in prison, too, right?
Yeah. At first, I would just sing, not know what I was saying. It took me years to just... A lot of people want to try to sing in Spanish, but just to try to get the accent right, rolling R is difficult. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd sing to the guys on the yard all the time. And and then when I got out, I couldn't find a job right away, so I did that, and it just took off.
It's incredible to me that all the things... So the talent that you have here, I sort of think, well, he's been doing it for a while. You've been a musician for a while. But you learned to play guitar relatively pretty recently. You learned a whole language relatively pretty recently, and then were able to insert yourself into a culture pretty seamlessly relatively. That's, I don't know if it's, you know, part con man, part Superman, but like, it's incredible the things that you're able to do in that short amount of time, and then it comes across so naturally on film to me. I never took for granted. I was like, oh, this is what he does, you know. But to think it happened so recently is the motivation behind it and the drive to, I guess, want to do that is fascinating.
You know, I was going to say one thing, like Cubans, I really, my humor works with theirs, you know. They're very funny people, you know. Like, I'll walk down the street and they'll go, Harry Potter. Sure. They think I'm Harry Potter.
Great.
Or, I don't know, and there's so much, everybody, every street is an artist or a painter. Or this. Like, for instance, do you show Eric a lot in the film? Yeah, the guy's helping translate and everything. This guy, I literally, first trip, I get off the plane, I'm walking down the street, and some guy says, oh, you play guitar? Come. He brought me into that guy's house, and I am living upstairs from him. This is a first trip, you know, and he's probably the most important person in what I'm doing.
Yeah, because he helps translate all of your music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a small world.
Back in 2002.
It is a small... Talk to me about the Mateo versus Matthew, I guess, difference. Do you see it as two personalities or
characters?
Well,
people that are only speaking Spanish, Mateo makes sense to them.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I got out, I went on like a talent show. It's kind of like a gong show, talent show kind of thing. And I went on it weeks after I got out because you know, they used to specialize, like they had one Korean who spoke, who sang a couple Spanish songs. And that's when they started calling me Mateo. And I used to go on that show a lot, singing, doing comedy, and yeah.
And it just sort of grew from there?
Yeah, I became Mateo right then, yeah. Pretty much right out of prison.
It still fluctuates, though, because every time you go to Cuba, you change your answering machine. And sometimes I'll come back and I'll leave a message and I'll say, hi, it's Mateo. Or, hi, you've reached Matthew. So...
I'm confused.
Yeah.
Do you act differently? I mean, well, maybe this is better for you. Does he act differently as Mateo versus Matthew, or is it just kind of a thing to go between two cultures?
Tough question. I think you have to see the movie for that. I think there's a thing, you have an affinity for performing. And sometimes I'll sit down and I talk to you as Matthew, and sometimes I'll sit down and I'll talk to you as Mateo, the sort of romantic Cuban artist. And to me, that's what's really interesting about it, because all of your music's so beautiful and so loving. And even probably in the demeanor in this interview, like how we're acting now, how you're acting now, it's a lot different than what he is like when he's performing or recording. Do you know what I mean? He'll be on the whole time. And I think you have a natural talent for that, you know, because it doesn't feel like a performance. You know, it's your home. And so I think that's the same thing with calling him Mateo or identifying as Mateo versus Matthew. You know, it just depends on the environment and what you're feeling at the time, who you're feeling connected to or disconnected from, you know?
I got to ask you now, the cats, do you still live in the same place? How are the cats doing? Are there new ones?
You know what? I love the cats, but I have a neighbor that keeps... he says he traps them and puts them somewhere else. I don't know what he's done with them. And then there'll be a new litter, and then I'll get attached to them, and then they'll be gone, and yeah...
Because I saw it obviously as a metaphor.
Yeah, it became that.
Yeah.
At first we thought they were just cats.
but I mean, it's a metaphor where you care for somebody, and they mention it, your mother, your Cuban mother, mm-hmm. in the film, she kind of says it too, I think. She says where he's trying to find his place, talk to your family. I believe there's a scene where she literally says, call your mom. But it's that idea that you don't, when you get attached to something and it leaves and it's always leaving and coming back kind of idea, which I see for you going to Cuba, what, a couple times a year, I guess?
More. Yeah. Yeah, a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're there for maybe, what, half the year on average?
No, like a week, 2 weeks each trip, but I go every month or two.
Oh, so eventually, so over a year, yeah.
Yeah,
quite a bit.
Quite some time.
But it's sort of that metaphor of the cats where just when you get attached, it's gone again. Do you feel, I guess, Mateo, do you feel, this is going to sound like a very crazy hippie question, are you running from something to travel this much and to split between two worlds in LA and in Cuba? Or is it just every couple weeks you get the hankering to, you know what, I got to get up and move. I want to go be inspired, or I got to go back to LA.
Well, I hadn't thought of it like that, but I always thought of it like as, I just really don't like it here that much. You know what I mean? I really love it there. I also love, I'd like to see the whole world, you know, like Japan, and sometimes I'll sing for French people here, and they really love what I do. I'd love to experience France, and, you know.
It's interesting, you know, it's always fun for me to hear other people interview Matthew, just because we spent so much time doing traditional style interviews, even though they're not in the documentary, but we spent months. I interviewed everyone in his life and in his backstory, just trying to figure out what was going on here and asking like questions like that. And it made me realize, unless he's forthcoming over time or he feels like the need to open up, it wasn't my job to then answer that, you know, for him. And so that's why there's a lot of fallen observation in the film, is because I actually think at the end of it, it's hard for a lot of people to self-reflect. It's hard for me, you know? Because sometimes you don't really know why you're doing things. You just feel like you want to.
Well, and that's kind of, I guess, a good filmmaker question for you, Aaron, because I think a lot of people are going to watch this and like it. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to watch it and not know why they liked it. Yeah. And then some people are going to watch it and say, nothing happens. I don't care. You know, this guy doesn't do anything. Who cares? What's the message? And I know it's obviously flexible, but what's kind of the universal idea that we're looking at?
Well, it's just people are complicated.
Yeah. You know,
and looks are extremely deceiving. And there's like so many layers to people. Things can be ugly and beautiful at the same time, and you can be silent and still express yourself in other ways. And I hope people identify with like the art form, because to me that's what's so incredible, is despite all of these other habits or affinities or you know, chaptered in his past, he's still able to work so hard and work towards something. And what's really interesting is you finish this whole album and he's still living in the same room in LA. And people want him to have like a complete difference. Because I get that, because that's sort of like the movie ending. That's the Hollywood ending. This huge thing happens, and you know what? Your life isn't completely different from finishing this album, right? You're you're still working your ass off, right?
Yeah, my air conditioner doesn't work. I just drove it from Riverside.
See?
Nowhere. My car's going like this.
Jamie?
Oh, my God.
I wish this, you know, I mean, if this were a fiction film, cut you into some profits and change your life, you know, but it is a documentary. It's got this certain audience.
Sorry, so I reached my phone.
We should answer it. It could be good. Is it a job?
It's just real life with Mateo.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk Japan. Let's talk profits at least a little bit.
Sure, maybe. Yeah, let's do it.
It's I love the Japan scene for a couple reasons. The first one is this is almost a movie ending. It's so stereotypical that something would connect in Japan that hasn't connected anywhere else yet. You know, different cultures like different things. And I feel like the Japanese pick up a lot of American stuff that we look at and say, what? We don't like this. So I love that idea in Japan. The metaphor, too, of you, Mateo, talking several times in this film, the gigs you play here in LA at parties, going through restaurants, stuff like that, people are eating, people aren't paying attention, you don't have a captive audience. And in Japan, these people are just glued to you.
Yeah.
It's the exact... Was it too much of a swing? Is it too much with autographs and photos and captivity?
No,
or after
it.
A while, were you like, you know what? This is enough of this.
I could get used to that.
Sure.
They're the best audiences. They really are.
How did they find you? Because
Online. They heard... me online, yeah.
Because the language, they don't get the language. You come out speaking English, and I'm thinking, how many of these people know what he's saying? You're singing in Spanish, they definitely don't know what you're saying. But it's the emotion and, I guess, the connection and stuff. Yeah. It just amazes me.
And some of them hear the music ahead of time, and they and a lot of them know the old songs. It's funny. Even Spanish,
that's true. Yeah. And I guess even the style, if you know that style of music.
Yeah, absolutely. When it happened, you know, when we got the news, Matthew was like, I got this Japanese record label interested in me. And I actually thought you were, like, pulling my leg. I was like, uh-oh. And I really was hesitant. Like, we're not going to Japan. This isn't going to be. You're not going on tour in Japan, you know, because it was too ridiculous. It was like, oh, yeah, of course you're going to become big in Japan. And then it was just, like, sold out show after show. And I'm like, what? Of course. Of course it's here. And so, I mean, that's where you've released your most music now.
Yeah.
Right?
That's insane. I mean, hey, whatever works. It's just, and maybe it's perfect for this because you've crossed cultures in your own life in relative anonymity at first, and then now it's crossing another culture and another ocean on a much bigger level. That's crazy.
It was an awesome example, though, just like music just cutting straight through. Like, it didn't matter. You don't have to have a conversation with that person. Just listen to his music. Some people understood the words. Some people actually sang along to the words, and then other people just like the musicianship, you know, because you are a part of this very distinct type of music making, you know, that some people are familiar with, and you fit right in. That's one though. Like, my goal is eventually, I really hope you get picked up by like a music label in the U.S. and so that like you get that chance to then be compared to the artists who you've always wanted to be compared to, you know, because in Japan he is now, and you know he competes with them, and hopefully he'll be in the U.S. But it's, you know, it's sort of the reverse. It's reverse assimilation. You know, a lot of times you hear about Latin artists trying to break in to the U.S., you know, mainstream audience, and it's really, really hard. And this actually turns out to be hard as well in a completely different way.
Yeah.
Which is just weird to, bizarre to observe, especially here to hear Cuban musicians talk about it.
Will you do a sequel to this or a follow-up? Because the ending, and I think that's one of the most brilliant things, is I won't give away the scene, the story at the end. But the ending, you sort of leave on a life note, not a movie note.
Yeah.
It ends when it ends. Do you do a follow-up if he gets a record deal here? Or even if not, do you say, where is he 10 years from now?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's interesting. You know, we stopped shooting at the end of 2014. And now, what were we? 2015? And not much has changed in the U.S. life. Your music's getting better in Cuba, I think. But in terms of, like, do we do a prologue? Do we do a follow-up? Like, that change is still yet to come.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting. You know, we could have followed him forever. And, you know, maybe you'll just record 15,000 songs and that will be that, you know? Who knows? The other thing is, it's like, if you get $1 million, what happens? You know, what do you change about your life first?
It would buy me time. You know, I waste all day just
working. Doing,
yeah.
So,
3 or 4 gigs a day, just,
yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
So I was going to say, we got a couple minutes left. I don't know if you want to perform on here.
Sure, if you want, yeah.
You should play a new song. You should play a song that's not in the movie.
Absolutely.
Right?
You guys gave me I'm going to go listen to this tonight.
Oh, yeah.
I got it. I got the last CD.
Yes,
not The History of Cuba.
Yes, this is what introduced me.
This is
to Matthew. Some of these are original, some are covers, but also recorded in Cuba.
Nice. Okay. There you go.
He was recording in Cuba 10 years before I met him.
There you go. This is interesting.
Do you want me to sing along?
Yeah, okay. This is called Bajo Las Palmas, which means under the palm trees. I actually had, do you feature Yanaisi a lot in the film? Okay. Had a big fight with her. You know, well, you know, like, and this happened 2 years ago. And for like...
One funny anecdote was, not to make things more confusing, but when we got to Cuba, two main women in his life were Yanaisis and Yanaisis. And it was like, sometimes you even confuse the names. Yeah. It was just so hard to track at first.
Call it the Y generation. A lot of the people, the women of that age, have Ys in their names.
I'm a baseball fan, so even the men, even the baseball players come in here. Absolutely. Yeah. It's good to know.
Sorry. Bajo
so,
Palmas.
So, yeah, so, and then, you know, about an hour later, this melody popped into my head and said, shh, hold on, I got it. And so I recorded it quickly and... It says, under the palm trees where I first told you I loved you, where I first kissed you, that type of thing. So it's a typical bolero with maracas, two guitars and a trumpet. Cuando atardecía en la playa, una canción a guitarras, el aire perfumaba. Bajo las palmas te dije te amo y bajo las palmas también te besé y fue un milagro amarte por primera vez. Bajo la luna me diste un eclipse de amor y el mar en silencio nos vio. Fue la más breve pasión de amor.
Very nice.
Thank you. As I was singing, my chair starts turning towards Aaron.
Oh, you
I don't get any ideas.
Hey, hey.
His girlfriend's on the out
oh
there, so I'll get it now. Okay. Anyway, this way.
It's such an interesting... I don't know a ton about this style of music either, so even hearing it on the film, I really like on the film all the montages with it. It effectively is, you know, 4 or 5 music videos inside the film.
Sure, yeah.
But that's important. I like hearing that stuff because I think that gives a reference too, and it's just like what the Japanese probably do. No idea what you're saying. Don't speak Spanish, but based on the way it sounds, you can tell what the song might be about. You can tell the general emotion.
There's like a seductive quality to it.
Yeah.
You know? It's like a serenade and a lullaby. You know, and you know what's interesting to watch in the film and what he just did now is, well, if you want to show him, he sings, he reflects his voice off the top of the guitar because it's so, your voice is so quiet. And so he seems, that's why he holds it up so high, right?
I guess. I used to play in the restaurants and the waitresses were flying by, but yeah.
But you do sing off of here.
Yeah, yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah, to make it a little louder, yeah.
Which is really interesting.
Unconsciously,
like,
yeah.
It's this whole this whole act that's great.
I really like this. I got to tell you guys, I usually don't like films like this and documentaries like this. I'm more of a facts, like an objective. Sure. Let's find this out. What are we going for? And I watched it. I watched it a couple times. And the first time I was like, that's kind of interesting. And the second time I did all my notes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I actually really like this film. There are films on here that we've done, I'm sure, that I've blown up that are similar. But I'm watching this and it's like, you know, it's fitting for who you are. Mm-hmm. Because an artist doesn't have that same sense of purpose driven, I've got to be here, I've got to do this. You're not out there, I've got to sell a million records, I've got to make a million mm-hmm. bucks. That ain't what it's about. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice if it happened, but that's not what it's about. And I think the film captures that. I really enjoyed it. So I really, really liked it. One quick question for you, Aaron. The opening scene when he's driving over, I believe, a bridge here in LA, is that the 7th Street Bridge?
What bridge was that we drove over?
Are you talking about just on the other side of
of downtown?
Yeah,
where the factories are.
It wasn't the 7th, but they're all the same. You know, yeah, 1st, 4th, and 7th.
Okay,
yeah.
It was the 1st Street Bridge.
Okay, because I saw the architecture on the bridge a little bit, and I was like, wait. I shot a music video down there last year, so I was like, wait a second. I know like a ton of those factories and
buildings.
Bizarre
thing about living in LA, you're like the same bridge shot in every movie.
Yeah, you know, and you know every one of those locations. Yeah, like, God, we could talk about LA for hours.
Yeah, I live right near there.
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. just over the bridge, and there you are.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting neighborhood.
Yeah, it is. For sure it's changing, too.
Which is true of all of L.A., I guess. Yeah. So, again, Tuesday, for those who aren't here in L.A., it's in Hollywood at what
it's
theater
called,
right now?
It's called Arena Cinema. And then Tuesday...
Tuesday, iTunes.
iTunes North America.
Okay.
So, and then hopefully the world very soon. I hope so.
I mean, Japan's going to love
it. Oh, my God. I can't wait. You know, because we get all of his music fans there.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden. Because it's such a counterpoint to his music.
That's the weirdest and coolest part of this story is that Japan angle. I have no idea. I like it. Tuesday on iTunes, Mateo. You guys remember, you can tweet us, comment on here. We'll send stuff along to you guys if folks have any questions or whatever. Awesome. You can also visit mateofilm.com for more information. There, buying records, I assume. Can it be done through Mateo?
You can buy Matthew's old CD right now. The soundtrack's going to be coming out on iTunes soon. And then the music he records, the album he records in the film, he'll be releasing soon. Mm-hmm.
History of Cuba.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. Looking forward to that. I will definitely pick that up when that comes out.
Yeah,
but MateoFilm.com on iTunes, North America wide on Tuesday, worldwide, hopefully soon after.
Yes.
I know you guys have been touring a long time. Thank you for sitting down with us.
Thank you.
Thanks
today.
This was fun. That again is Mateo Stoneman, Aaron Narr from the film Mateo. That's it for us today on Popcorn Talk. You guys can hit subscribe on YouTube. You guys can tweet me at Bobby DeMuro with any questions, comments, that sort of stuff. We'll see you next week right here on Inside the Documentary.
Ciao.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you.
That was fun.
Thank you.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.